And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend. With plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, we were not on the air yesterday. So since we last spoke, more chaos in the college football coaching carousel. We get the college football playoff rankings last night. What's winning in football nowadays? Plus, could one of the teams, one of the local football teams, be losing their coach next? We'll react to Brian Kelly going to LSU. Obviously, Lincoln Riley going to USC. We talked about that on Monday, but what does all of this mean for college football? Speaking of coaches, who in the NFL will be coaching for their job now here over the final 5-6 weeks of the season? We'll catch up with Dan Wetzel from Yahoo to talk about everything going on in college football. We'll talk with Jeremy Schilling about an hour from now about everything going on in golf, such as Tiger Woods' first public comments yesterday since his terrible accident a year ago. Is Shane Beamer, is Brent Venables on the move? We'll get to all of it over the next few hours. Plus, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong, and a whole lot more between now and 3 o'clock. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there, click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest version of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Joe's on the steel wheels as always. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, this camel ride's not too bad. About you?
Yeah, not bad at all. We're getting ready for the Citadel tonight here against UNC Asheville. Tip-off at 6:30, so a little bit earlier than normal. Coverage will begin at 6 o'clock over on our sister station, The City, tonight for the Citadel and UNC Asheville. So I'm coming to you from the road, from our remote studios in Asheville, North Carolina, with you for the afternoon, getting ready for the Citadel tonight. Let me start with this. The college football playoff rankings came out last night. They went really as expected. Not much of a surprise, and right now not a whole lot of drama at this point. We'll see what happens this weekend with the conference championship games. This is really the final rankings before the real deal. We're down to about 6 teams now that have a real shot. If we get some real chaos this weekend, then it opens the door for a bunch of other teams. If you have to pick from now what would be the next best option, you know, a 2-loss team. But let's assume that enough of these top teams and favorite teams win this weekend. It really comes down to 6. The 4 you have right now, and then you have Notre Dame and Oklahoma State that are just hoping, waiting for an opportunity. Here's what I find interesting. Look at the NFL. Look who's winning right now in the NFL. Offensive coaches are in first place in every division in the NFC. Dallas, Tampa, Green Bay, Arizona. The defensive coaches, Washington football team, Minnesota, Seattle, are under 500. Joe Judge was a special teams coach. His team's in last place. Dan Campbell was a position coach. His team hasn't won a game. In the AFC, you have Andy Reid in first place, offensive coach. Zach Taylor and the Bengals, wild card team right outside of first place, offensive guy. But in college football, when you look at the top teams in college football this year, Georgia has a defensive head coach. Alabama, defensive head coach. Cincinnati, defensive head coach. Those are 3 of the top 4 teams. The one exception is Michigan. But even those top teams in college football this year that have offensive coaches, they're not known this year for the offense. Right? Like Harbaugh in Michigan. They're not winning because of some high-flying offense. And the offense played well. They were able to run it through Ohio State on Saturday. But really, it's been about that rushing attack. It's been about defense. It hasn't been some prolific offensive attack or because of great quarterback play or the passing numbers. Same at Oklahoma State. Very similar to Michigan. They've been winning with their defense, normally. In fact, statistically, it's the best defense we've seen in that conference in 12 years. And with the running game offensively, but again, it hasn't been some sort of, you know, high-flying offense, winning a bunch of shootouts, scoring a ton of points. Those teams, even the offensive coaches, have been about defense this year. And we talk so much, maybe not on this show, but just in general, people will talk a lot about society getting softer, participation trophies, you know, all this and that. But it's still toughness that wins out. In life, it's mental toughness. In football, it's physical toughness. The best businessmen are tough. In fact, I read an article yesterday about how the number one skill for a successful entrepreneur is mental toughness. Thomas Edison once said, "I have not failed once. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." That's a good way to look at it. I never failed. I just found a bunch of ways that won't work. It was part of the process. But you have to stay tough. You have to remain mentally tough to get through 10,000 failures to finally have that success. It can take toughness at your job. Maybe your marriage can be a little challenging. It takes toughness. Raising a family can be tough, I'm sure. Fighting a disease, very tough. Dealing with just the struggles of life can be tough. You lose a loved one, it's tough to get through. And as they say, tough times don't last, tough people do. In football, it's the tough teams that last. This is my concern, or has been my concern, for the Arizona Cardinals. They always start off well, or have under Cliff Kingsbury, and have faded in the second half of the year. This season, so far so good, but in the back of your mind, you still have that concern. Is the other shoe going to drop for Arizona? Because they have not been a physical team. That's not their style. They like to spread you out. They like to throw it a bunch. They've never had good defense there. Kingsbury comes from the Big 12. That's how he coached it at Texas Tech. It was about offense. It was about throwing the football. Not a physical team. They're not going to run it down your throat. They're not going to play well in cold weather. Right? It's my concern for the Cardinals moving forward this year. We'll see. If they can overcome that, that's the final. That's the missing piece for Arizona. You know, the 49ers got to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They were a tough team. They were a physical team, led by their defense and their ground game. The Buccaneers last year, when they won the Super Bowl, sure, they had Tom Brady, but they won because of their rush defense, their pass rush, and then Leonard Fournette. Right, playoff Leonard, or whatever they're calling him last year. He was great. That's what the Patriots always did so well with Tom Brady. That this time of year, as you head into December, certainly playoff football, the Patriots were really good at running the football. And they played really good defense, of course. And it's why people always point to Brady and say, like, oh, he didn't have to do a whole lot in those playoff wins. Yeah, because they're handing the football off. They're playing good defense. They're playing low-scoring games. They were physical teams. This year, right now, the Patriots, same idea. They're the best team in football right now. They're physically tough. They play good defense. They run the football. They play well in the trenches. The Packers. The Packers are probably the best team in the NFC. Remember, they got beat up by the 49ers. They were not tough enough to handle the 49ers the last couple of years. So they devoted their entire drafts to go get tougher. Bring in A.J. Dillon, draft extra linemen, a blocking tight end. Now they are a more physical team. If you watch them against the Rams this past week, right, they've become a more physical team defensively, running the football in the trenches. The Titans, when they had Derrick Henry, really good season until he got injured. Very physical, just pounding it with Derrick Henry 30 times and playing tough defense. The Rams are struggling right now because they've moved away from the physicality. If you look at college football, Georgia and Michigan, very physical teams. They're the top two teams in the ranking. They're about defense and run game. They'll kill you in the trenches. Michigan was far more physical than Ohio State on Saturday. Harbaugh hired Josh Gattis to come up to open up the offense at Michigan. He thought he was falling behind. Right, falling behind the times. And Harbaugh thought, we're not winning enough at Michigan. Maybe we need to adapt. We need to adjust. We need to spread things out a little bit more on offense, open it up a little bit more. Almost cost him his job. Cost him money. He had to take a pay cut, so he said, forget that. I'm going to go back to my way this year. Right? I'm kind of coaching for my job. People are unhappy with me. I got to give money back. Let me get back to my basics. He has, and they're the number two team in the country. By running the football, playing good defense, dominating in the trenches, they're having their best season in 25 years. John Madden reached out to Harbaugh after Saturday's game, told him that was one of the best offensive line performances he's ever seen. And that's a long time for Madden, watching a lot of football. They bullied Ohio State. Ohio State's best players are their wide receivers. They're not as physical of a team as Michigan. Michigan was tougher. Right? Cincinnati, physical team. Oklahoma State, Gundy's typically known for his offense, but this year it's been about the defense and the run game. It's not some spread. It's not Brandon Whedon and Justin Blackmon throwing for 4,000 yards. They're running the football. They're playing tough defense. They're beating you up in the trenches. It's what happened Saturday. Clemson against South Carolina. Who was the more physical team? It was clearly Clemson. They ran it for 265 yards. Physicality, right? Toughness is what wins in life, in business, in football. What do they always say about the best businessmen? Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, the late Steve Jobs. Oh, they're tough. They're tough to deal with. They're tough to work for. They're demanding. They're tough. The best football teams, physically tough. And we're seeing that in the college football rankings. We're seeing that in the best teams in the NFL. Let me shift to this, because along the same lines, with that said, in the NFL, it's also not always the best team that wins, but a lot of times it's the healthiest. And we saw this last year in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes has a banged-up toe. He's down. His offensive lineman couldn't do anything. The Buccaneers looked like the much better team. They rolled in the Super Bowl. In the NBA, most years, it really comes down to the healthiest team. Like when the Raptors beat the Warriors, and the Warriors were missing all their pieces. Last year, the Nets looked to be the best team in the NBA, but by the by Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, all they had left was Kevin Durant, and he was banged up. They couldn't get passed by the Bucks. The Bucks go on to win the NBA Finals. It happens most years in the NBA over the years where it's not necessarily the best team, but just the healthiest team that wins by the end of the year. So look around the NFL. I was thinking about this yesterday on the way here. The Rams are 0-3 since Robert Woods got injured. Seemingly a big loss for them. He was one of those guys that did a little bit of everything. They haven't been able to replace him. 0-3. The Cowboys have dropped 3 of 4 since Dak Prescott's injury. During that time frame, they've also been without their top two wide receivers. They're missing two of their best pass rushers. And now they have to get ready to play Thursday, which is tomorrow, and they have a little bit of an outbreak. They don't have their head coach. They have some other players with COVID. Amari Cooper may still not be able to return. Now, the Cowboys haven't been playing as well lately. The season's kind of catching up to them. The Titans have now lost 2 in a row, including to the Texans. Without Derrick Henry, they've had 9 turnovers in the 2 games. I like the Giants to win the division this year. Maybe I was way off, but also, they've been one of the most banged-up teams. They can't stay healthy on offense. Barkley, Shepard, Tony, Galladay, even the tight ends. Now Daniel Jones isn't playing this weekend. They're in last place. Why? Because they've probably been the unhealthiest team of that division. They can't stay on the field. Jameis Winston got hurt in New Orleans. The Saints have now lost 4 in a row. They're under 500. Russell Wilson hasn't been the same since his injury. The Seahawks are in last place. First time Russell Wilson has lost 3 straight games in his entire career. Look at the Panthers. Christian McCaffrey can't stay on the field. Now Sam Darnold's injured. You're down to, at times, your third-string quarterback. The Panthers have lost 7 of 9 after a 3-0 start. The Browns have been dealing with plenty of injuries. Same idea. They've lost 5 of 8 after a good start. Baker Mayfield's banged up. The running backs have been banged up. Right, even Jarvis Landry, before they got rid of OBJ, they've had some injuries to the wide receiver position. As the season goes on and you get more and more beat up, right, some teams more than others, that's when you start to see who's healthy or who's not, which teams fade, which teams get better. The Patriots had a bunch of opt-outs a year ago. They get those players back, essentially like returning from an injury. You don't have a banged-up quarterback this year for New England like last year at Cam Newton, and suddenly they're the best team in the AFC. In fact, the 4 healthiest teams in the NFL right now all have winning records. And it's what makes the Packers and the Cardinals, what they have done, so impressive. Green Bay has been missing all sorts of pieces. Now, their quarterback's good enough to make up the difference. Aaron Rodgers has been doing this his entire career. He makes up for talent deficiencies on most Sundays. It's what Arizona, though, makes what they're doing even more impressive, because one of the missing pieces for them has been their quarterback. That quarterback is that one position that can make up, you know, lacking in other areas. But when you're also missing the quarterback, well, obviously it's just that much tougher. And apparently the Cardinals, without their quarterback, without some of their wide receivers, their defensive players, that team is good enough, or it's the system that's good enough, or maybe it's Cliff Kingsbury that's good enough. Something is working there that you can plug in Colt McCoy and be just fine without Kyler Murray. It's impressive to still win without, most notably, your star quarterback. But also impressive just to win with a bunch of moving pieces, injuries, guys missing games. That's been the Packers and the Cardinals. And a lot of other teams have been fading because injuries have caught up to them. The Titans, the Cowboys, the Rams, they don't look the same over the past month as they did to start the year, because now they're a little more beat up. And when you look at college football, Georgia, the number 1 team in the country, doing it without their star quarterback, You know, without their tight end, without their number one wide receiver, they're still the number one team in the country. Impressive what Georgia is doing as well. They're the only consistent in this chaotic season, and they're doing it still without the most talented quarterback on their roster and other pieces. Right, missing a couple of guys on defense. Still the best defense in the country. Toughness wins in football. We're seeing that. But also sometimes it just comes down to being healthy. And the teams that can overcome those injuries, well, those truly are, right, maybe the best teams in football. We're seeing it with Georgia. We're seeing it with Green Bay. We're seeing it with Arizona. They've been able to outrun the injuries so far. Will it continue? We'll see. But it's been impressive what some of these teams have done. Comes down to being tough and also maybe just being healthy. We see that most years, at least in the NFL. Coming up, with Brian Kelly going to LSU, which jobs are left in college football that are those final stay jobs, that are the jobs you don't want to leave, that you want to get to and stay there? We'll get to that when we come back, because I don't know if there's any of those jobs left at this point. It's the Maurer Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Maurer Midday Show.
Now I'm only 5 years old. I've gotta do just what I'm told. 'Cause Santa Claus is gonna be dropping in on me. Now is there something I might have missed? I had quite a few things on my list. I hope he can fit it all under that Christmas tree.
Coming up, are there any stay jobs left in college football? The job that you don't want to leave for another school. Get to that here on the Maurer Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Hey, the calendar has flipped to December. Thanksgiving has come and gone. It's hard to believe it's already December. So time to bust out the holiday music with a little Till Santa's Gone by Clint Black here to get us started. Tis the season. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Coaches are leaving jobs. Players are entering the transfer portal. Notre Dame may now be left out of the playoff because of it. People are unhappy. All sorts of chaos. Most wonderful time of the year. Brian Kelly goes to LSU. Now, we were not on the air yesterday. It was a travel day for me with Citadel basketball. So, unfortunately, not on the air yesterday. We got the news, Brian Kelly to LSU Monday night. So I haven't been able to react to it on air. And I was, I'm sure, as shocked as anybody when I first saw it on Monday. Same with Lincoln Riley. You know, you didn't get any whispers. We heard other names. You never heard Brian Kelly. You never heard Lincoln Riley's name, not for the USC job. And then they're the ones that are hired. Now, is Brian Kelly a cultural fit with LSU? I don't think so. But he can coach, and I think he'll win there. You know, I think it's important in college football or college sports in general, probably mostly in football, that you're from the region in which you coach. I don't hide the fact I'm from the Northeast. I've been working and living in the South now here for almost 8 years. It's been now just about. It's going to be 8 years coming up in a couple of months. And every once in a while, right, you'll hear, I'll be called a Yankee, and you'll hear, oh, go back to, and we don't care what you have to say. Why are you telling us what to think? Right. Sometimes when you turn on the radio or when you go into an office or you sit down with a coach, you want to hear somebody who talks like you, right, who sounds like you, who uses similar words, who came from a similar background. I do think it's important in college football that you're from that same region. Dabo, Southerner, Nick Saban, Southerner, they work in the South. Jimbo Fisher, Southerner, he's had success here in the South. I do think that's important. You usually don't see coaches like a Luke Fickell, right, come down to the SEC or even give it a try. Ed Orgeron, perfect for LSU. I think that's important. Kelly's not that type of guy. He's from Boston. He's a Massachusetts guy. He's a little gruff. He's different from Ed O. I don't know if there's that fit with him in LSU, but look, the guy can coach, and he's going to be able to coach with more talent at LSU than he had at Notre Dame. So I think he'll be just fine. And if you win games, people probably don't care where you come from, as long as you win. And I think Brian Kelly's going to win. I think he's going to do just fine at LSU. I think he's certainly an upgrade over Ed Orgeron. I think he's a better coach than Ed O. I think he'll be just fine. He hit his ceiling at Notre Dame. And it's why I was surprised he didn't leave sooner. I've mentioned it the last couple of years, really mostly with the NFL. I saw maybe he would make a jump to the NFL. That was the next step for him. And when he didn't, and now that he turned 60, I figured, well, he just must be, you know, content staying at Notre Dame for the long haul until we got this shocking announcement on Monday. While Notre Dame still has a chance to go win the national championship, which is one of the many reasons why I hate the early signing period. Because signing period, we call it the early signing period, it's really just the signing period. And the one in February, we should call the late signing period. That's for the holdovers, the leftovers. This is the day, and it's coming up in 2 weeks. So, of course, LSU wants to get a new coach in there. And if Brian Kelly wants to take that job, of course he wants to start now. He's got to hit the recruiting trail hard. He's got 2 weeks to put together or keep a class while being judged immediately at LSU. Right? You need these players. You need a good recruiting class. It's the SEC. It's LSU. And if you struggle even in year one, people are going to – Ed Orgeron just got fired a year and a half after winning a national championship. So I don't fault Brian Kelly or LSU. It's just the way things are set up now with this early signing period. And I hate that you have to take a coach away of a team that's still competing for a national championship because of the timing of all this. We don't need the early signing period. Or if you're going to do the early signing period, I heard people say move it to August. Right? That's not a bad idea either. But I've long complained about it. Why put it in the middle of the biggest events of the college football season? We have conference championship weekend this weekend. We have a playoff to get ready for. And, oh, by the way, early signing period's in 2 weeks, and we got to get a new head coach, and we got to pluck this guy from over here. It makes no sense to me. But here's what's most interesting to me. Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma. He became the first coach to leave Oklahoma for another school since 1947. Brian Kelly left Notre Dame. He became the first coach to leave Notre Dame for another school since 1907. It's been over 100 years. For Oklahoma, it's been over 70 years. And it happened all in a 36-hour window. College football is changing. These coaches made these moves to give themselves a better chance at a national championship. And there are only a select number of schools that seem like they can provide that. Now, you can get to the playoff, right? Notre Dame, Brian Kelly, he's getting to the playoff. But the difference is, can you actually then win it all? I think only a few places offer you the opportunity to not only get there, but to finish the job. Notre Dame doesn't seem to be one of those. They've been blown out at every opportunity under Brian Kelly. Oklahoma, right? Lincoln Riley didn't do well in the playoff games. It's been 20 years for Oklahoma. It's why we discuss the idea of a super league in college football, right? Where there are only a select number of schools in that top tier that drive the sport, so why don't you put them all together and forget about everybody else? It's been one of the biggest issues in college football recently is the fact that it's being dominated by just a handful of programs. And evidently, based off of these last few days, that group seems to be getting even smaller because you would have assumed that it included Notre Dame and Oklahoma. But now you have coaches leaving those schools for other opportunities. So I gave you my list of what I would call stay schools on Monday, right? The schools that you would want to stay at, the schools you wouldn't leave for another job. And if it was before Monday, I would have included Oklahoma. But now after the Lincoln Riley news, I guess not. And on Monday, I did include Notre Dame because I had no idea that about 6 hours later, Brian Kelly was going to be named the head coach of LSU. So I guess you have to cross Notre Dame off. And Oklahoma, Texas, I put them together. So with the developments with Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley, cross Texas off as well. And now when you want to talk about stay schools, I don't think there are many left. I would say, but even as I say these, I don't know if I'm all that confident. Right? I would say Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, Georgia, LSU, Florida. And I would say Clemson is right now, but maybe only because of Dabo. If another coach comes to Clemson, do we think that they wouldn't pass up an opportunity to then go somewhere else? I mean, there's always been the speculation that maybe Dabo would leave for Alabama. Now, that may never happen. Dabo may have no interest in that. But if it does ever happen, right, then, well, Clemson wouldn't be a stay school either. Michigan, I don't know. I mean, Harbaugh's an alum. He seems to be happy there. But other coaches nowadays, you go to Michigan, is that your final stop? Or are you looking to move up? Most of these schools, I don't know. I don't know if there is such a thing as a stay school anymore. Right? Think back to over the years, you had guys like Tom Osborne and Bobby Bowden and Joe Paterno and Bear Bryant and Bud Wilkinson and Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, guys that would stay there for 30 years. They get to that job, and they wouldn't worry about updating the resume. They wouldn't look around for other opportunities. They were right where they wanted to be. Now, you get to a new job, and the thought process, and seemingly most of these schools, like, all right, 3 years, 4 years, and then move on to another opportunity. Now, granted, Brian Kelly had been at Notre Dame for, what, I think like 12 years. Lincoln Riley had been at Oklahoma for about six, so it wasn't such a quick turnaround. But usually those are schools that you get there, you want to stay. You don't want to leave. And I think this is the downside to Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC, that this is what they're signing up for. And as I said at the time, who wins in all this? I think the only winner is really the school's bank accounts, because now it's harder for Oklahoma and Texas. It's harder for the teams in the SEC. Lincoln Riley doesn't want to be there anymore. Oklahoma just lost their coach. The path gets more difficult for teams already in the SEC like the Gamecocks. What's the win in all this? It's really just to make more money. And so hopefully it's worthwhile, because if you're Oklahoma, I talked about this Monday when we got the news, you lost your coach, you may lose your rival, you're going to have a tougher path now, but hey, you're going to make more money. Notre Dame doesn't want to join a conference because they can make more money on their own. Okay, well, as you saw, maybe they have a better chance of winning a national championship or competing if they were actually in a conference. And Brian Kelly had the run of the place there. He could schedule whoever he wanted, no conference limitations. You have ultimate job security. He still bailed. Have you ever had a job in your life, in your industry, where you had all the freedom in the world? You had a boss that wasn't breathing over your shoulder. You had maybe like a company card, and they never questioned you about it. You could use the card because you were doing such a good job as a sales. You had all the freedom. Nobody breathing down your neck. You could come and go as you pleased, but it still wasn't everything you wanted. You wanted to climb even further up in the industry, and you thought, there's no room to grow here. Right, that's kind of like Brian Kelly. He's the winningest coach in Notre Dame history, a program that has no conference obligations. Sure, they have to play five ACC schools. That's it. Right, but you have total control, really, of your schedule for the most part. You have that NBC deal. You have ultimate job security if you're Brian Kelly. He wasn't going anywhere. He seemingly had everything. You have a chance to go to the playoff this year, which would be the third time in the last 4 years, and still wasn't enough because he still sees room to grow elsewhere, and that's being able to go win a national championship, and I think that's a lot easier to do at LSU than Notre Dame, and I think that's the main reason why Brian Kelly would leave Notre Dame for LSU. I don't know if there are any stay schools left, any schools that coaches will get to and say, nope, I have no interest in going anywhere else. This is where I want to be for the rest of my career. Right, even a Dabo may eventually leave at some point for another job. Who knows? Harbaugh's an alum, but otherwise, I don't know, Michigan, right? Maybe they leave. Maybe he goes back to the NFL someday. We've had rumors of that. These other schools as well, like a Florida and LSU, maybe you'd leave from there. I don't know how many state schools there are left anymore, how often we will get a coach that will stick around like a Joe Paterno or a Bobby Bowden. When we come back, we'll talk about all this sort of stuff with Dan Wetzel, who covers college football for Yahoo Sports. We'll run through everything going on in college football and what has been a crazy week. And we'll catch up with Dan next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We're expanding the 12 days of Christmas this year here on December 1st. It's been a wild week in college football. So let's get right to it and get to everything. Joining us now, Dan Wetzel, who covers college football for Yahoo Sports. On Twitter at Dan Wetzel. Read his work at yahoosports.com. He's with us now. Dan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Good to catch up with you once again. It's been a crazy week in college football for you. Just right off the top, what's been the most surprising part of this week so far for you in college football?
I mean, you know, the two things, you know, this is always a wild time. You have the playoffs shaping up, and then you have the coaching carousel. So it's always wild this time of year. But I think the thing that sets this year apart is the movements of the coaches at Oklahoma and Notre Dame. For all of the changes college football has gone through the years, generally or almost exclusively, when somebody gets one of these powerhouse jobs, they stay and try to win national championships there. They never move to another job unless they get fired or there's scandal or they get old. So you have these iconic people at these big programs, whether it's Bobby Bowden or Bear Bryant or Woody and Bo and Osborne and Joe Pa or whatever it is. They'll stay because they're at one of those great jobs and they just try to keep building and get this team or that. In one 24-hour period, you had Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, a program no one ever left since before Bud Wilkerson, and you had Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame, a place that no one had left for over 100 years on their own volition, right? So that's the biggest change, is that you have these guys jumping from a powerhouse program to another, USC and LSU. And then the second part is the timing of Kelly's move, where Notre Dame has a very viable path and I wouldn't say a great chance, but a chance of reaching the college football playoff still. So you have a coach leaving a team that can still win the national championship, and only needs a couple upsets. And he basically said, I don't care. I don't want to coach you guys in a playoff. You won't see that in any sport. So Brian Kelly's timing to leave Notre Dame and just bailing on a team that's got a shot is particularly unusual and resets the time frame that we've ever seen. I mean, there was a time no one would leave until after a bowl game. Then it was became, well, if it's not a major bowl, now you got a guy bailing on a possible playoff team.
Yeah, it's a good point. And two things that I actually was just talking about last segment before you joined us. So let me follow up on both those. Starting with that last one, the last point you made about Brian Kelly in the playoff, I assume this is a byproduct, the timing of all this, because of early signing day. I've never been a fan of the early signing day period. I don't know why you put it in the middle of this month when we're getting ready for the playoff and the bowl games. You have enough going on already in college football. I like how the NFL spaces things out throughout the year. So I guess my question for you would be, do you like this current setup in college football where you have this early signing day here in December? And therefore, I guess it leads to situations like this where you got to get a new coach in here for the recruiting period, even though he's leaving a program that's still competing for a national championship. Do you like this setup in college football right now?
No, early signing period I've been opposed to the whole time. It's a terrible thing. And it was created by coaches whining that they had to keep working and keep, quote-unquote, babysitting recruits. Hey, tough break. These guys are signing a $100 million deal. Sorry you got to work so hard, guys. Sorry, you know, my sincere apologies. Completely bad deal for the players. You're committing to one program. Now everyone's moving. Coordinators, everything's changing on you. And now you've got what? It's a scramble? I mean, what if you wanted to play? You know, we see it with, let's take Oklahoma, right? And this is straight through all the way down to whatever program you want. You go all the way down to UMass or something like that, whatever the worst program is. And there's a coordinator leaving you thought you were going to play. But you're going to Oklahoma because you think, hey, this is the offense that Lincoln Riley runs. And that's where I want to go. And all of a sudden, Lincoln Riley's gone, and you don't know who the coach is. They could bring in a running coach. Who knows? And now you're scrambling. And you don't have all the information. Do I stick with this program? Do I sign somewhere else? I don't know what to do. Totally unfair. Other people will sign in about 2 weeks, and then their coordinator will leave for another job. So the coaching carousel should go through. Then the school, then the coach, then the people should be able to sign. To do it this way, it was just lazy coaches. And we've had a lot of movement to help players have a little bit more freedom and a little more right, or the ability to switch schools as easily as Brian Kelly and these guys, they should get rid of this thing. It was a bad idea to begin with. It doesn't make any sense. It's always, well, we'll sign a couple kids that are totally committed. If they're totally committed, they'll wait till January. You could at least push it back into January. So it's a bad thing. It is one of the problems. LSU pushing Brian Kelly to say you must go right now, again, is also totally bizarre to me. You could have waited 5 days to see. Obviously, they don't want to lose him for a month, but this is how ramped up this is. It also just put Brian Kelly in a bad spot, and he jumped right into it. But, I mean, he's getting absolutely hammered in publicity.
Yeah.
Because he has to now go out and say to parents and coaches, high school coaches and players and all that, you're the guy that quit on your own team. And if Notre Dame makes this playoff, that will be the story of the playoff. And beyond like sports talk radio, this is like the thing that captures everyone's attention. Wait, that team whose coach quit on him because he didn't believe in him is now got a shot to play for a national title. And you go, man, that's like a Disney movie, right? That's going to get it'll be devastating publicity for Brian Kelly. Now, maybe he's a good coach. LSU's a good place. Maybe not devastating. But that is not how you want to start a job where your questions are, why'd you just quit on your team? So this whole thing is messed up. There's no good way to do this stuff, but this certainly isn't it.
No, I agree with you. Now, that's what's interesting. The idea in this move or the belief is that he's, you know, he going to LSU because you have an easier path to win a national championship, but here we are with Notre Dame potentially going to the playoff this year when this all goes down. So this move for Brian Kelly, do you think it says more about Notre Dame, LSU, maybe just Brian Kelly or college football? What's the message in this? Because we believe Notre Dame isn't at that level to actually win a national championship, but here they are potentially going to the playoff for, what, the third time in the last 4 years. What do you think this says just about Notre Dame or college football right now?
The way elite recruits flock to certain schools now have changed the dynamic, and the growth in recruiting and scouting. You know, it's way more like the NFL draft, which is also imperfect. But you have huge scouting departments at every school now. Retired coaches who work as analysts. Every game, every high school game in America is on film now. Many, many practices are on film. You're not just showing up one Friday night, seeing some kid play under the lights. He looks good. We sign him. And then you don't know. You can watch every, and they do. They can watch every single play this kid has played for 3 or 4 years in high school, let alone 7-on-7 and all that. So it's a much more precise thing. And these top schools target certain kids, and they're able to get certain kids. The majority of the top 35 players in the country, the five-star recruits, the first round of an NFL draft has 32 picks, right? It's basically the same as a first-round pick. They're going to the same 4, 5, 6 schools. Georgia's about to sign 6 five stars in a couple weeks. That's like an NFL team with 6 first round picks. They're going to win. They're going to be really good when you have that. Even if 1 or 2 don't pan out, you'll take your chances. Notre Dame struggled to get that level player. They could get a lot of really good ones. They have a very, very good program, and Brian Kelly's a very good coach, and they win a ton of games there. He kind of maxed it out. But he struggled to get that 5th best player in the country, the 8th best player. LSU, you can get that. So he obviously thinks, if I can get that at LSU, I'll win a title. One of the things about coaches that it's funny with LSU is they look around and go, wait a minute, Les Miles won a national title there and Ed Orgeron won a national title. No coach in America thinks either of those guys is a particularly good football coach. And so a guy like Brian Kelly that is a good football coach has got to be sitting there going, well, hey, if those two can win it, how the heck can I win it? And so that's why he's going. So that's not a great thing, but he also could be proven wrong because you just don't know. Maybe he could have won it at Notre Dame, but he at 60 is tired of the Notre Dame thing. I have no problem with that. It's his life. It's his career. He should have the freedom to do that. I just find the timing when, look, there are 4 big games this weekend, and if 2 of them, just 2 of them, of the 4, let alone 3 or 4, break a certain way, Notre Dame is in that playoff. If Georgia beats Alabama by a touchdown or more, I don't see a 2-loss Alabama getting in. Maybe they don't even have to do that. And then if Cincinnati were to lose or Michigan were to lose or Oklahoma State were to lose, none of which would be massive upsets, Notre Dame's going to get in the playoff. There's just nobody to jump them. And if that's the case, then he walked away from a team that could get in, and who the heck knows? I actually think they'd be an extremely motivated team to prove their old coach wrong, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple last moments with Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports. Speaking of that playoff, and you could tell me if I'm really off base, do you think the playoff plays a role in this? Because some people have been against the idea of the playoff in college football, point to the fact that now we only focus on the playoff and winning the national championship as opposed to in years past where, you know, maybe you win a good bowl game and that was a successful season. Do you think just the invention of the playoff in college football and the emphasis on winning solely the national championship, does that play a role in some of these coaching moves or the moves we've seen where coaches now leave Notre Dame and Oklahoma?
I think it leads to the impatience of the on the school's part. You know, it's the loyalty thing is a two-way street, right? Sure, Lincoln Riley leaves and Brian, and it's easy to say, look at those guys. But LSU fired Ed Orgeron a season and a half after he won a national title. Dan Mullen had one bad year at Florida. He's gone. Jimmy Lake was the coach at Washington for 13 games and was fired. You know, there's no loyalty. So you sign these big deals and go. I just think the whole sport and some of these like only one school can win the title every year. So there's 130 playing. If that's all you're going to measure success at, a lot of you are going to be disappointed. And Nick Saban's going to win every other one. So I don't know how this all works, but I just think this. I don't know that it's necessarily the playoff. I actually do think the expansion of the playoff will help alleviate some of that because right now you go into a four-team playoff, you're thrown in the lion's den. Okay, so if Cincinnati's number four or Notre Dame's number four, they got to go play Georgia, and they're probably going to lose. And it's a disappointing season. If you go to a 12-team playoff and you have two rounds before that, all of a sudden, let's say Notre Dame's the five seed and they get to host whatever 12, you know, I don't know, like Ole Miss, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a home playoff game and they beat Ole Miss in this exciting game, or Ole Miss goes up there and wins a game against Notre Dame. All of a sudden, you've had this massive thing and then you go and lose to Georgia. It's not such a bad thing. Like, there's just more excitement. So I think the playoff will help that. I think it'll spread out successful seasons all over the country. And it's one of the reasons why Oklahoma and Texas, who had a very nice path to that playoff in the Big 12, it's a head scratch, and I think they will regret trying to jump into the SEC. You look at Lincoln Riley, he's saying, I am doing that. I'm going to go with an easier path out in the Pac-12 and have a lot better chance of winning than trying to go into that dogfight of the SEC.
Yeah, certainly. Before we let you go, let's end on that. Oklahoma, that job open now. Do you think that's the job that finally gets Brent Venables away from Clemson?
Well, you know, look, he's got some ties there. He's obviously been extremely cheesy and has not jumped for anything else. It's one of the 10 best jobs in the country. It has a tremendous history. Great institutional support. I do think it's a much tougher job today than it was when it was in the Big 12, because you don't have the institutional advantages over all or almost all of the rest of the league. You're just another school in there. But still, I would think that would be the job. If it's not, I just don't know what he's waiting for. You know, like what job is going to come along that's better if he gets offered that? You know, I don't know, but I would think, man, if there's ever one that's going to drop, this isn't just an SEC job or a high major or a Power 5 job. This is Oklahoma. You can do really, really well at Oklahoma.
Yeah, certainly. He's Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports. Read his work there. Listen to the podcast. Follow him on Twitter, Dan Wetzel. Dan, great stuff. Appreciate you taking the time here during this busy week, breaking it all down. And, hey, enjoy whatever else comes our way in college football here in the coming days.
It'll be some any minute now, so don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, Dan. Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports on Twitter at Dan Wetzel. Appreciate the time and insight. And I'd even get to a bunch of the other things I wanted to with him, because there's so much going on in college football. And when you talk about these coaching changes, I do think it is a little multi-layered in the changes that we've seen in college football. But we ended that conversation talking about Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma. Could it be the Gamecocks that now reap the benefits from that move? We'll get to that when we come back to wrap up Hour 1. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I remember a Christmas long ago. I remember a hanging mistletoe.
Wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time from Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Dan Wetzel and read his work at yahoosports.com for all the latest on everything going on in college football to keep up with it all. We'll get into that Oklahoma job coming up. As Dan said, in regards to college football, something may happen any minute from now. We'll get to some audio next hour and talk about that job, because it seems like Oklahoma has zeroed in their top three targets, or three of their top targets based off of reports, all have ties to the local football scene and are all current coaches, right, with local teams. And on top of that, somebody close to the Oklahoma program believes that any minute now we could get some sort of announcement. So we'll get to all that. Next hour, where will Oklahoma go for that next head coach, and what will it mean for some of the teams around here, even if you're not an Oklahoma fan? But let me get to this. Appreciate the time from Dan. Last segment, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Oklahoma does lose their head coach, Lincoln Riley. Now there's speculation, there's rumors, there's reports that Shane Beamer may be on that list of potential candidates to replace him. But assuming Shane Beamer stays at South Carolina, we always reference the wedding singer here on the show, right? South Carolina could be like John Lovitz, reaping all the benefits in that case, if Adam Sandler, as he says, you know, losing his mind, here it would be Oklahoma losing their coach. Because the latest is this announcement yesterday, and this isn't much, this is just a prediction, but 24/7 Sports believes that the tight end, Austin Stagner, who entered the transfer portal for Oklahoma, they have him going to South Carolina. And this coming after Spencer Rattler entered the transfer portal earlier this week, and the rumors or speculation that he may be interested in South Carolina simply because of that Shane Beamer connection. Maybe the Gamecocks could benefit. They could reap all the benefits from Oklahoma losing their coach with some of these guys entering the transfer portal and wanting to go to a familiar face. Shane Beamer not only coached there, but on the offensive side. What was Lincoln Riley known for? His offense. You can poach some of that offensive talent that may be leaving Oklahoma and not want to go to USC, the other USC. By the way, this tight end was the number three tight end recruit in his class, has 3 years left of eligibility, played more of a backup role for Oklahoma, but would be a good get for South Carolina, just like Spencer Rattler. If Beamer does stay, maybe it's the Gamecocks that start reaping the benefits, getting some of these players to come to Columbia because of that familiarity. And what a boost that'd be for them. Hour two next. Talk about Tiger Woods with Jeremy Schilling when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.